What's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of Nights at the Round Table. Today, we're going to be talking about pastor kids and all their crazy stories. And it's just in luck that we got B Real, who's a pastor's kid. And today, we're going to have Bo Beast on as well. Y'all are going to want to listen to this. We're going to have all the stories, all the dirt, all the details in today's episode. We hope you enjoy it. This is Nights at the Round Table. What up, y'all? Let me see you shake it.
Bend over to the front, touch your toes. All our listeners, what get low.
It's your boy, man, Weezy. And I got B Real here. We're going digital. And if you don't know, we got your best friend. If she's your best friend, you'll call her Elise. If you're known on the podcast, you'll call her Bo Beast. If she's your superhero, she's the Bo Beastinator. What is up?
Where did this come from?
I'm on a roll. I'm feeling it. That live intro really got me feeling like I'm somebody when it comes.
You had given it a shot. I didn't know we had like gone more than just Bo Beast, but I had time, you know.
Yeah, I feel like
he's in the stew. He's been cooking.
I was in it. How you guys doing? So Bo Beast is in Huntington Beach. B Real is in Van Nuys, and I am in Nashville right now, y'all. So if y'all are watching us via YouTube's, we're in three different states right now. Nobody goes to Huntington Beach.
I'm very sensitive about being in the OC. I understand. I get it.
Nobody goes there. You might as well be in North Dakota.
So rude. It's only 45 minutes, basically, kind of, if you go at the right time. Okay.
Yeah, at the right time. And yeah, no. It's okay, though. It's pretty. And you have a really nice apartment. Comparatively,
I still have the lamp. If you're watching on YouTube, this is the lamp that Angela and Manny bought me in my first apartment by myself, and I still have it. It came with me.
Not just bought, but technically I picked it out.
Okay.
If you're gonna give credit, give the correct credit.
You were gonna give credit. That's what's important. You know what I mean?
Picked it out, you know. You guys, we don't have wineage because obviously, like I said, we're in different places, but we're still drinking stuff. B got some good Evian. Bo Beast in kind fashion has a White Claw.
Just figured I would continue being basic and white.
Mango flavor.
And I'm drinking
White Claw. White Claw, more true for your head top.
You guys, it's so nice to be here. I'm so happy. I need to take a moment.
I know.
It's nice.
And on this very accurate topic. On pastor kids and their stories.
You're a pastor's kid, you got stories for days.
And I know pastor's kids, and I understand if you're in the church world, there's probably a lot of stigmatization that comes with being a pastor's kid. Or if you knew your pastor's kid, you knew everything that they went through. And so we thought it would be dope to tell some funny stories, to tell some not so funny stories, and, you know, to really talk about what it's like to being under the watchful eye of everyone.
Yeah.
Like everyone, including God. That was my
moment. Everyone under the watchful eye of God?
Yeah, but pastors kids have it the worst.
Christ.
We all know that.
Christ and the congregation, eyes on you. Well, yeah. I will make a quick distinction. So technically, my dad was just an itinerant evangelist. So I was never technically a pastor's kid because he never actually pastored at a church. But the way that those ministry worlds and spaces work, it was very much so like I got to experience so many PK stories from a ton of different churches. So from traveling with my dad over the years, we've seen some crazy stuff, some funny, some bad, some scary. That's always happened. Like, church is one of those weird places where it's a lot like being human, where we all have this capacity to feel things on a very deep level, whether that is pain and sorrow and grieving, and whether that is total elation and joy and happiness. And the church is kind of a fluid thing that also has that capacity. So in these PK stories, there is like down here to up here, and then the in between that you're just like, I don't even know what's going on. Craziness, you know?
Yep. I feel like your dad being an itinerant minister, for me, I grew up in basically the same church. Like my dad, and dad's been on the podcast season one, I think, back in the dizzy, at least. Mm-hmm. Don't say
yeah.
But like, I remember like my dad, he was a pastor at Hillsong Church, just, you know, small, little struggling church. In,
a little gathering.
I don't know if you've heard of it. Just like, you know, real house church vibes. And then we moved to the Shire in Sydney. And so that's the only church I'd known in a sense. But you growing up with an itinerant mm-hmm. pastor as a dad, itinerant speakers and pastors too, Brandon, first of all. But yeah. You would have seen a lot more crazy than I feel like, to me, I thought normal. Like I thought my church experience was normal because it's all I'd known. Whereas you were exposed to a lot more different church experiences, right?
Yeah. And I mean, too, growing up, there's so many kids that you become friends with. And it's like, you know, especially a lot of these itinerant, I don't know why I was going to say players. My mind's on basketball and Olympics that just happened. These itinerant preachers, what happens is they'll go to the same spot consistently, right? If a church is like, hey, we really like you, really like what you brought, we'll bring you out here again. So I developed these friendships with like different pastors' kids.
Right.
And one thing that I will say, at least in my own experience, for the most part, pastors' kids were always the wildest.
Mm.
And I have a theory, which we'll get to later. But it was always one of those things where those kids, for the most part, like I would say majority of them that I grew up with, it didn't turn out good for them.
Mm.
And I mean, there are a few, obviously, that do turn out good, hence me and Elise. but for the most part, it was always craziness because these kids had so much pressure on them to be something. And so, man, I'll start off this first one. I remember the youth group that I first started going off to when I was in sixth grade. And I've shared how that year I was hanging out with kids who just weren't up to no good. And so I remember this youth group that I went to, this was in the East Bay area where I grew up, one of the pastor's sons, man, he'd come to youth group and he was a little bit older at this time, but he was using the youth group to like find his next like little hookup partner. And so he ran through that youth group. And when I say ran through, like I'm talking like he assembled the Avengers. Like it was like he had Infinity Gauntlet. He had like a whole roster that was full by the end of that fall semester. And the crazy thing about this youth group was they were under this like sort of impression of like, hey, we want these kids, we want this to be a safe space. And so like let them kind of express in the ways that they want to. And you know, these kids are gonna kind of do what kids are gonna do. And so it was in this huge sanctuary and they would black out everything. And there would just be spotlights on worship. And when I tell you, freaks come out at nighttime or in the dark, dude, that was this youth group. So I remember my first time, someone invited me, they're like, yo, you got to come to this youth group. At the time, it was called U-Turn.
U-Turn?
Yeah, U-Turn. Like, because
kids would come here. U-Turn. Yes, U-Turn.
And so I remember I was sitting in the back. And next thing you know, these people next to me are just like making out, you know, and I'm in sixth grade and you're like, oh man, this is bad. They're making
out. Was the service going?
What's that?
Was the service going?
Yeah, service was going. I mean, you couldn't see anything during worship. This was during worship until our Lord
Jesus Christ. Because the lights were really dark. You had the smoke machine. Yeah. It was basically a nightclub.
But it ended up getting worse. Like, I remember there was one service where literally there was this girl who was getting fingered on the other side.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. In a youth service. Now, when I tell you, it wasn't like a small youth group. Like there was like easily 150 kids there in this huge sanctuary. So this youth group became the place where like one of the pastor's kids was like the player. Like he would like kind of like he was in high school. He can like kind of pick out whatever. And then it became a place where one of his friends was connected with was starting to sell drugs out of there. So there became this spot there at youth group. Once youth group was dismissed, like guys would go over there and smoke weed and stuff. And what's crazy was this PK was kind of the ringleader of that. And so what was so funny was this was actually one of those catalysts that got me to get like actually saved, because I was like, man, if this is like what it's going to be, I'm not trying to be here. Like, and it was really something that solidified it in my mind that I was like, yeah, if I'm going to be about this, like, walk of faith, it's not going to be fake, and I'm not going to use it to like my own selfish gain. But yeah, what ended up getting crazy too was one of the guys who's connected with brought a gun to youth group. What? Now, it's insane because this was in a really nice neighborhood. Like this church, like you're probably average income of a family. You're talking six figures easy. Mm. So the police end up calling my house and they ask my mom and they're like, hey, is your son Brandon Smith? And he was at the youth group, you know, a couple weeks back or whatever. I was like, yeah. So the cops had ended up calling to see if I was connected with the kid who brought the gun. And I remember feeling so scared. I was like, all I was trying to go was just go to church and worship God. And now all of a sudden I'm being roped in into this thing that has to do more with PK's son. And I'm just over here trying to be a good kid. And so I remember that was one of my first like experiences apart from my dad, just at a church that I was at, watching another PK act out and do his thing.
Oh, dang. My goodness. That's like worse than nightclubs, right? I don't know.
Oh, it was like a Jesus, little baby Jesus nightclub.
Well, I remember, did you hear this line where they were like youth groups were just like notorious for needing to tell people how crazy their kids were. Like youth pastors specifically, like you'd be at a youth pastor conference and be like, my kids were smoking cigarettes outside. And then someone else would be like, my kids are all pregnant. And I'm like, I don't know if like it became a competition on how crazy your kids were. Like, yeah. Is it how like godly, like Jesus will be hanging out and smoking with them? Like, would he? I don't know. I don't know. But it felt like growing up, the cooler you were. Like, I remember for a while, do you know Subi Jeans? Like, well, Subi, the fashion label?
K-S-U-B-I? Yeah.
It used to be T-S-U-B-I. Then they got, like, I don't know, like a suit or something. That could be so inaccurate, but let's go with it. But I remember for a while, everyone in our youth ministry was wearing Subis. And it literally became the thing of, like, it became the running joke, but it wasn't a joke. Like, you needed Subis to be at youth. And I remember, this is horrible. Yours is funny. I just thought about this story now. It's trauma. I'll bring it up with my therapist tomorrow. But I remember making my mom buy me these wide leg Subis, which actually would be like way back in fashion now. But yeah, these wide leg Subis that were $200, which when I was 13, nothing I owned was $200. This ministry salary, because I needed them for my youth group. The youth group that they were the pastors of. And it just was like this, this thing that was like, It was like almost more clicky sometimes than like school was. So I was already like never fitting in at school and didn't really like sometimes fit in a youth group. But it was just kind of like the two worlds. Like it kind of felt like sometimes like youth group was just trying so hard to be cool. I don't know. Like, I don't know if that was with you guys.
No, it definitely was.
It's a world in its of its own. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't a PK kid, but I got the privilege of traveling the world doing music. And
the green rooms.
I've met all the PK kids and all the pastors. And it's definitely a thing where if you exist within your little youth group, you can really be the top dog.
Yes.
In a way that you can't anywhere else because the rules are different there. You already have a leg up as a PK. You already have a sense of importance, like just on its own, because you are connected to the guy who already is set up to be the leader, to be the guy. So you have this like clout that's just passed down to you. And I've seen that so many times, like they were the cool kids. They just were. And some were crazy. Some I know pastor's kids that are ranged from, they're in the ministry right now, married and have beautiful kids, to freaking crackheads.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's no protection.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because like, I don't think I realized how sheltered I was as a pastor's kid until I moved to Los Angeles. Like until I moved away from my family, I never thought that I was the cool kid. Or I had privilege until I moved away from my family and realized, oh my gosh, I have embraced being Michael Murphy's daughter, even though it didn't matter to 97% of Australia, 3%, that feels still like a lot of people, but like, even though it didn't matter to like 60% of Australia, but like, you think everyone knows who your dad is. Like I grew up thinking everyone in the world knows who my dad is. Like I would be in a film taping for Australian Idol. I'd be in at the Easter show, which is a fair in Australia. Y'all don't know what that is. And that's fine. But once I got to Hillsong Conference, everyone knows who my dad is. And I was like, I'm Michael Murphy's daughter. And I'd be like offended if they didn't know who my dad was. Like, I was offended for him. He wasn't even offended. But I was like, you don't know Michael Murphy? Okay, are you even a Christian?
Who are you? You don't even know him?
It was just like green rooms. Like, there were, people grew up like hating green rooms. I grew up loving them. Like, I think it's part of the networker in me, or the three. Brandon, you probably hate me saying that. But like, I kind of liked the idea of walking into a room and being able to like connect with people and seeing how quickly I could make connections with people. And it was kind of lost on me as a kid, but now like it's so interesting to people watch in a green room, because it's the most interesting place in the world is a green room. If you haven't been to a Christian green room, y'all gotta get to it.
Dude, and that's the craziest thing. Like, I just remember some of these conferences my dad would speak at, or even some of these bigger churches, of just how lavish these green rooms were. Like, it literally felt like for the entire duration, however long the services were or whatever, it was like I had a personal assistant.
Yeah.
And growing up, like, that was like dope. Yes. They're like, hey, do you want anything to eat? I'm like, all right, so I'm gonna want fries, I'm gonna get tacos from Jug, and all of that. Like, it was like literally waiting on you hand and foot. And it's interesting because it wasn't until later where I started to realize, like, oh, this is actually really harmful for my ego. Like, I'm gonna start thinking I'm something when I'm not. And in reality, it's like that world is so catered to serving you and propping you up.
Well, speaking of that, can you guys identify a trait that is still in you, or recently you have gotten out of you, that was a byproduct of being a pastor's kid?
Yeah,
for sure. I'll share first. I think one of the biggest things in that world is the value is associated, especially in older years, once I started speaking and I'm like flowing in the prophetic and all sorts of stuff. There's such a value attached to you because of the authority or the anointing that is on your life. So it's like you pray for somebody, they get healed, and all of a sudden there's people who are just like, oh my God, you're amazing. Like in some ways, you become an icon, right? You become this little piece through which they're seeing God through. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that, especially with my identity, has been so like, my identity is for so many years has been so wrapped up in what I can do and what I can produce. And specifically in this setting, in a ministry setting, in a church space. And that's something, man, I've really had to like pull out of me, because in the down times when I wasn't traveling and speaking and doing ministry, it was like, I felt like, man, I'm not even anything. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And so a lot of that served to harm me in the sense of my identity. It's not connected in what I can produce. My identity is actually wrapped up if no one ever recognized me or knew who my dad was, like, yeah, I'm still the shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the difference. And I really had to come into that in my 20s, really.
Yeah, that's for sure one that would have been subconsciously was in me as well. I think like, I could talk about a bunch. I could talk about the fact that I was so entitled as a kid and had no awareness of it. I could talk about the secrets, which I talked about in very early on this podcast, of like how one of the things, one of our episodes, like The Lie the Church Sold Me, was that secrets kept you on stage. And that was something I learned as a kid, not because my dad had secrets at all, honestly, truly. And you guys have met him. He's great. But because I saw it a lot of the time was that if you could keep the persona on stage as the pastor, as the one people want to be like, then you kept on stage rather than leading people like to Jesus and realizing we all suck. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was one of them. But I think like a big one for me was that like I saw my value connected to who I was with rather than who I was. And so it's kind of similar to brands of like the performance-y mentality. But for me, it meant that when I got to LA, I gravitated towards celebrities or famous people or people with influence, people in the church, because to me, the value that got me through the door was who I was connected to, rather than like the fact that like God had a vision for my life and he wanted me to do things. And that has literally been in the last 12 months of, and still learning it, still realizing God has stuff for me to do. And, he wants to do stuff through me, and it doesn't have to come through who I'm connected to. It's not trusting someone else to open the door for me. It's trusting that like God will open a door for me And then like feeling confident enough to walk through it, because being, I don't know if you felt this, Brandon, but like maybe a pastor's daughter, a girl in ministry, it was more so even like, I was always like, y'all, I was waiting to get married for so many years, because to me, like the amount of boyfriends I went through, but I wasn't allowed to call them a boyfriend because I wasn't actually allowed to date till after high school because I'm a PK.
Your little situationships.
My little situationships. But I'm telling you, like, oh my God. Well, you want to go through them? Like Blake Pierce, Gary Dover, Matthew Corby, all the things. Like I could go through, every year was a different one. Every Hillsong conference, I had a different conference crush. Every summer camp, I had a camp crush. Because I was like always, and it was from a place of like, I genuinely desired for like to be married and to be a wife. But also a lot of it was, I felt like my calling didn't start till I had a ring on my finger. And I still don't really know where that came from. But then I got married and then got divorced. And I was like, oh, it turns out that's actually not when it happens. But it was such a thing in me of like, I saw these pastors' wives and these other pastors' daughters that were these like good girls. And I would just always find myself in precarious situations, trying to do the right thing. But then like, be like, how did I get here? Every like, just so many, how did I get here stories.
It's man, insane. I think that's, you know, it's, this is something that can affect more than just, if you're listening, you know, we're talking about pastor stories, but I think some of this stuff sounds similar to what any kid with expectations on them. You're living in a life where your parents had expectations, whether your parents like hella successful, like your dad's affluent, so he expects you to be rich, or your parents are hella smart and they're expecting you to have really good grades and be something like that, or your parents are hella talented, they're freakish athletes, and all of a sudden you turn out to be not that great at any kind of sport. But there's an expectation, you live in a shadow. And I think that's something that everyone can identify with, living in the shadows of, and I don't even know if, could you be put there by the person? Maybe, but I think a lot of times we put ourselves there.
Yeah.
Like we impose the other person's success or their vocation onto us and almost like project like, oh, I have to be this. And maybe the person never even told you that they had to be, you had, like, did your parents ever lay on the, you better pick up my mantle and run with it, daughter and son?
No, I'm a girl.
Double portion.
I was meant to be my brother. You know what I mean? So like.
You are the,
yeah. Yeah, I was the other option. No, I'm kidding. So you never felt, if you're listening,
you never felt that, like your parents never made you feel like it was your responsibility to continue that, like, quote unquote, the family business?
Me or Brendan?
Either one of you.
Oh.
Yeah, I was waiting for Elise to answer. I mean, I can answer for me. I think in a lot of ways, it was spoken, unspoken, and it was constantly reinforced by everybody else in that space, because I would always get the, man, you're so much like your dad, you know? And then I would always get the prophetic word of, hey, here's Elijah, and you're Elisha.
Yes!
Double portion. watch this, ooh, double, you know. and so I think there was this part of me, and then, you know, even talks to my dad of like, hey, someday I would really love for you to take over this ministry. And so I think growing up, before I kind of came into my own of like, what is it that I actually want to make this, I think up until that point, I felt such a pressure, because I was like, I had seen my dad's ministry and who he was up here. And I was just a kid. I mean, I was just a boy, like just trying to grow up and trying to be perfect. You know, I was just like, and so I think that pressure, it was exciting to me in some ways, but then I think it also turned me off in some ways, because I felt like, yeah, it wasn't until I grew kind of in understanding who I am, I was like, oh, I could actually never be that in that way. And I think too, like, and this, I think this interaction happens with parents and their kids. Like your kids get to a certain age and all of a sudden you realize they're not actually who I wanted them to be. And the kid is realizing I'm not actually who you wanted me to be.
Yeah.
And that tension sometimes can be really rough, just because it's like, dude, people are growing and you just never know. And so I think for me, I definitely felt that pressure, but it was mostly a lot from other people. Constantly, every single weekend that I went, and people would hear me speak, and they'd be like, "Oh man, you're gonna be doing this. You're gonna be traveling with him." Like, not even real prophetic words. It was like well wishes with a Jesus slapped on the back of it, you know. And so, I realized, like, for me, the pressure dropped to become all that I think people wanted me to be was when I went through some like really tough stuff, and I died in so many ways, and what resurrected on the other side wasn't all what people wanted me to be.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was only through the death, the defining moments and the pain and the crushing where I realized what I actually wanted to become and who God was actually calling me to be. So,
wow. Yeah. No, I got the prophetic words, but they sounded different to Brandon's. I always obviously got the Esther for such time as this. Like, you were born for such a time as this. Like, you are just God has got you as a princess. And I would always cry because I was just so emotional as a kid.
Yeah. There's a Deborah anointing on your life.
There's a Deborah. The amount of times, man, the amount of times I was called Ruth and I just had to stick with my Naomi. I was like, who's dying? Good Lord. But no, it's just like they were like, what are the girls in the Bible? But so I always felt like I was meant to preach. I always enjoyed communicating, whether it was like public speaking in school. I was really good at drama. I was good at music. I was just good at creative. But I always thought that was meant to be preaching. And then the amount of prophecies I got that it's not either or, it's both and. But they were talking about both and because I used to be like a little worship leader because, again, I'm a PK. We're all worshiping.
Wait. I never knew you were a worship leader.
Yeah, bro.
I didn't even know you could hold a note.
Reading together.
What? Wait.
Fell and then we made out, you know. So
wait, but were you able to sing, or they just forced you to sing?
No, I could sing in like back in the day. It's like a muscle, you know. You know this, so I could sing. I could hold a tune. I could kind of.
Oh my God! Please sing something.
I could sing a new song to the Lord.
Please sing something. I want to hear it. Let's go. Come on. I want to hear a brand new single. Elise. Single. Bo Beast. What?
I will not perform for you. This is the new Elise. Not performing for people. Like when it's like, when it suits me.
Oh my God. Okay.
Dance like David danced.
No, your song is I Ain't Your Roof.
I'm the
okay, go. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go.
No, so every like so many prophetic words at summer camps about like it's not either or, it's both ends. They were talking about like worship leading and preaching, or so I thought, and I was like, okay, yeah, I can sing and preach. Just one woman show over here. Damn. That could be some of the entitlement. Who knows?
Yeah, but I was always jealous of those guys for sure.
Yeah, you know, yeah, those guys, exactly. Elise. So I would think it was both. So I was like, I'm going to worship lead and preach. And then it wasn't until I got to LA. Like, I was old, you guys, when I figured all this out, that they told me I had to choose between worship leading and speaking. And I was like, well, okay, I'll choose speaking, I guess, because, like, I'm good at it. Which I'm still to this day a little sour about because, like, I stopped singing for a bunch of years. And I, like, genuinely enjoy it. But they
that's
can hear for that, that's fine. So but then now I'm realizing, oh wait, maybe the prophetic word kind of was true, but it was never what I thought. Maybe it's like, hey Elise, like you get to preach and also do a bunch of other crap that doesn't look like ministry to church people at all. And Mammy and I were talking about this the other day of like, it's so funny when people like have an idea of what they think ministry is or what they think like Christian is. And then you're like, well, wait, how many people have you prayed with? How many people have you brought closer to God through what you're doing? Like in the way you're doing, like, let's look at some fruit right now. And so like, I think that growing up, I just never knew how narrow-minded I thought my future was. And I thought the world was my oyster. And when I say world, I mean my church in the south part of Sydney with like 2,000 members at its peak, like just like
this is it.
I was like, this is it. And then our church conferences, when my dad would let me get up and pray, I was like, oh my God. I was like, you know, you're not ready. You're not ready. Here comes the alliteration. Like, you're welcome.
Yeah, that's a situation. They're definitely in that world, is a sense, because I felt it. And then I, of course, like all the PKs that I've known growing up, there is this sense of like inflated importance. And like,
and then you would rank it by who your dad was. You'd be ranked.
And how good you could pray on a microphone.
Yep. And like, give a chance.
Dude, that world is so like, I say that world because I'm not really like a part of it anymore. Like I'm not at these big time conferences anymore, but it's like, it's a weird rush, like praying in front of that many people or having something to say. Like I remember the first time I spoke like a, it was like a sermonette. Wasn't even like,
yeah,
a full
like
sermon.
One of those like three by like you get full minutes. There's three of you, go.
Oh, dude, I got 10 minutes. I could what? Like say, I could like expand a story, a thought, and I could pray at the end. And this was in front of 17,000 people. And I remember feeling so nervous because I was like, oh my God, these people are expecting like some crazy manna from heaven. And I'm like, oh man, I just like watched porn yesterday. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, what? What anointed thing could I really say? Like, I'm not going to bring in revival. Like, this is going to be trash, you know? And then getting up there and then, like, actually, like, having something to say. But it was funny because the post of that, there was a sense of, like, man, you can't tell me nothing. Like, I can't be touched from you peasants. Like, I'm God's anointed.
It's because you have this moment before you preach where you're like, you think that you're not qualified to preach, and then you realize that God can still use you, it turns out. And then, like, I don't know, every story in the Bible. And then afterwards, instead of being like, God, this is great, because of the reaction you get from people, it becomes, I freaking did that. I'm great. I'm Elise Murphy. Like, who, what's that, like, in Center Stage? You guys know. She's like, who the hell are you? That was me, the PK.
Yeah. I like that movie.
So it's interesting because like I felt like I saw that, and I think some of the biggest work we do on ourselves is when we die to ourselves, you know, like that's what Jesus, that's what the cross, that's what the story and the arc of the scripture, that's what it's always inviting us into, is to like lay down all these things and become more like him. And so that world, I saw so many PKs like really messed up because at the end of the day, they didn't know how they could be themselves without feeling this sense of importance and just being, you know what I'm saying? And so, dude, I don't know why I was reminded. I got another story real quick on a completely different thought.
Ready for it. Bring it. Wait, did you find, I have a question before you tell your story. Did you find, oh crap, I forgot my question. Man. See, guys, I'm out of rhythm with the podcasting. I'm not keeping a hold of it anymore. It's just like, did you find that like, nope, it's gone again. Carry on with this.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
But, the other thing too, which is kind of like, I think it's probably assumed, but a lot of kids like that I grew up with, they ended up so bad, not necessarily because of the pressure, which I think that either, my old coach used to say, pressure either bursts pipes or it creates diamonds. Which one are you, you know?
Love that.
And so for a lot of kids, I think it bursts their pipes and their internal world was like really crushed because mommy and daddy were so busy with the church that they never even got to see him. So I remember one of my friends, his dad was a pastor of a mega church in a pretty big city here in the United States. I can't say names or whatever, but I remember him in high school, we used to talk a lot because he was into basketball and he was playing for a like really competitive team. He had a travel team and all that sorts of stuff. And I remember he would like, he held so much resentment against his dad because his dad was never there to be at any of his games. And he's like, dude, I could count on one hand how many games my dad has been through this season. And for him, it was this sense of like, man, this sucks because it feels like my dad's occupation, which happens to be being a pastor in the sense, has completely taken over his priority and what he values over me, is essentially what he's saying. And because of that, that's where he started wilding out, acting out, almost getting a couple girls pregnant, and then like putting the family through a lot of scares, was he was trying to get attention because he felt like the church was taking it away from him.
Right.
And so, man, there were so many PKs that I know got really messed up because the years where families are supposed to be making really fun memories together and your formative years, you know, like instead of parents being for them in that situation, they were attending to the congregation.
Yeah.
You know, like they couldn't tell you what was going on in their kids' worlds, but they could tell you everything that's happening within their flock, you know? So it's funny because when you think about the parable of the lost sheep, it was like their own family became that one.
Wow.
And it was like, and it paralyzed so many kids. Like I know. And so I'm super fortunate that my dad was there for me. My mom was there for me and they were able to come to my games. And I think honestly, that's one of the reasons why it turned out okay, is because my parents were there for me during those years where they needed to be.
I remember for me, because I, like, you know, again, you really do, there is a special connection between PKs. Like, I remember when B and I, like, you and I met at my surprise party. That's someone else threw me. And you were there. You and Daddy were there.
Weird chain of events. So you meet somebody for the first time at their surprise birthday party with less than 20 people. You know? Why not?
I was like, do we know each other? Nah.
I was like, hi, I'm Brandon.
Turns out it worked out well for us. But like, I remember, like, there is a natural thing of, like, it's hard to know. And you can experience it in different ways. But if you've grown up in that spotlight in church, there is a special, like, bond that kind of develops. Just like there would be in other ways. Like, whether you're, like, child celebrity, whatever. I'm sure there's a bond there. Or, like, you're, like, a teacher's kid. Like, in those kind of worlds. Because there is a sense of, like, oh, man. I always make this joke of, like, you're a pastor's kid, too. I'm so sorry. Like, and I'm kind of joking, but I'm also kind of not, because it's a very rare experience. And I'm grateful for my parents. I didn't play sports. It's not that I couldn't. it's not that I didn't have skills. You know, I was just not interested in it. Also couldn't play anything. But my dad's not that much. So my dad probably would have come. But I remember on his ministry trips, he would take us. Like, we'd go there with him. And it didn't take over the trips. Because I know a lot of PK friends that, like, their holidays was actually their dad's ministry trip, and so they wouldn't see him, but they would be able to play at the beach. And then, like, and again, that's tough, because a lot of these parents that are preachers didn't have money, and you're trying to make do, trying to do the best. And so you do the best you can, hopefully, with what you know. But I remember it wasn't until, again, I came to LA that I realized, like, that I related a lot more to, like, people in the spotlight than I kind of realized I did. Again, never had that experience. Really was a big fish in a small pond and thought I was like, it was a massive ocean. And LA was good for me in that sense, because I got out here, I was like, wait, no one knows who my dad is? It's like walking the streets. Do you know Michael Murphy? And I'm like, I'm out. But I remember, like, the first time I bonded with a friend of mine. Well, she wasn't really a friend at the time, but, like, we bonded over this moment, who was like, everyone know her name, a great celebrity, and we're at a church conference. We went together with a couple of people with, like, a posse, which happens if you're a celebrity or you're a church pastor as well. So it turns out similar worlds. And my ex-husband had left me. It was the first time he left. And so I was a little bit wary of green rooms. I used to love them. Like I told you at the start, I freaking loved green rooms. I was the entitled kid that was like, this is going to be the best. I'm going to be famous in church world. God. But anyway, but this time I was walking to the green room very nervous, like so much heightened anxiety. Why? Because I knew what my life was and I didn't know how to wear the church kid mask of everything's great, church is great. Like, no, they're going to ask me about my marriage, because that's what people feel entitled to do in green rooms, is ask people about their marriages, especially if you're a young person that got married. And I remember the first person that came up was like, Elise, you just got married. How's your marriage?
Oh.
And I remember looking at this person and I forgot to tell a lie. And I said, well, this happened. He just left me and I'm probably going to get a divorce. And then I said, but how are you? And in so sarcastic, so cynical. And then I remembered, oh crap, this is reality. You didn't just think that. Like, you know, those moments when you're like, oh, did I just say that? Like, did that come out of my mouth? I realized I said it and I freaked out and I literally left him standing there and ran out the door. And my friend caught me and she's like, hey, can you go see where this other friend is, who was this, like, celebrity person? She ran away too. And I was like, no doubt, I get it. So I went, she was in, like, the SUV. I always get to say SVU, which is very different to an SUV. But she was in the SUV and I went in there and I was like, hey, are you good? And she's like, sorry, I couldn't do it. And I said, she said, what are you doing? And she's like, you like grew up in this. And I was like, I said, not now. I was like, there's something different tonight. And I just couldn't be in a room where everyone was asking me questions and keep lying. And she was like, oh, she's like, that's what I've grown up with. And I said, look, I don't get your world. Like, I'll never understand it. I said, but I am a firm believer that you don't have to have been through the same experience to be able to, in a way, relate to the same emotions. And I was like, I do on a small scale know what it feels like to have people feeling entitled to your life and knowing information and you feeling like you always have to have a good answer. And I said, and I'm just realizing that now. And we both had this moment. I was realizing it for the first time, like maybe I'm changing. Maybe I don't want to give everyone access to me just to make a connection, because that's what I grew up doing, was giving people access to my life in hopes of a connection. And I had to realize, and we had this moment, it was actually really cool and healing in a sense, and it brought us closer, because I realized, wow, maybe what I went through, like I could not even imagine doing that on an international level. And that's when I realized, okay, so pastors' kids know what pastors' kids have been through, but like you said, Manny, at the start, it's kind of the same in any area of life, whether you grew up as parents as a teacher or parents as a coach or parents as a pastor or a celebrity. Like, we all can have this feeling of having things put on us and falling prey to giving information that other people actually don't deserve in hopes to belong somewhere.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely one of those things where, I mean, in any situation, again, we're just talking about dealing with pressure. We're dealing with expectations that we didn't put on ourselves, but expectations that are thrown upon us, or somehow, or sometimes subconsciously we put them on ourselves. This is a question which I guess we can kind of get a real answer to, because at this point in juncture of our lives, B and Bobise were both at one point employed by churches. Now neither are employed by churches. So when I got out of the Christian industry, it was so evident and clear what I was a part of. No hate, no shade, but I knew it was a thing. It was a system. There were rules. Those rules were said to be rules that were God ordained. I understood that it was way more political than God ordained. And I don't mean political like Democrat, Republican, even though that was in there too. I just mean political in church politics. So I could, and I've told people this, I could never go back, because I'm out of the matrix. Now, I'm not saying like I don't love the church, because we're obviously still a part of a church in the way that I see it, like the family of God, not the walls, just the family. I couldn't go back to the system. Now that you guys not only have been raised in it, so you had like a whole behind the scenes look, but then you worked in it, now you're out of it. Can you ever see yourself being back in it, in the current system that exists?
I feel like I have to go first this one, because Brandon's answer is so simple. Hell no.
No, actually, that's not my answer. But
oh,
yeah, no, I think for me, I've been lucky to be a part of a very, for me, healthy church space with pastors who are extremely supportive. And they're empowering of me to be me. And the only reason that I stepped down wasn't because I didn't believe in the vision, was because there was other things that God was breathing on in my life. Now, if you had asked me to go work for the old church that I work for, or a lot of the churches that I'm aware of now, I'd be like, oh no, I'm good. I'm good, love, enjoy, you know? But I think in the right healthy space, I think like the church I'm still a part of, and I still teach on Sundays.
Yeah.
For sure, because I realize that it's a different type of place, and it's only in that different kind of place where I feel like I can actually be normal and be me. But I'd say majority of places, nah. I'm done with the church hustle. And I think so many people, especially young people, right? If you've grown up in that world, you see how much of a hustle it is. Not in all places, but I mean, it is. And it is a unique hustle in the sense that it's, I put air quotes, it's God ordained.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really, there are systems and structures in place to keep those in power with all the power. And it gives them liberties that other people do not get to have. I mean, I won't even get into these stories, but I know pastors' kids who are now serving time in jail for embezzling church funds. I know PKs who have hidden mysterious lovers and children, you know, like it's like it, and it, the system that's in place will continue to keep them in power. And so I think for me, that'd be my answer. I think there's like very few places where I could do what I do. And majority I can't, and that's okay. I'm good with that now.
I like that answer. That was a good answer.
Thanks. What's your answer?
I think that not like I was. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd say that because I think that it's a lot easier. I don't want to bring like male, female into it, but just from my experience, and I want to be careful not to blanket statement. Like B said, like not everywhere is like our experience, but.
No, but it's your experience.
And so I have seen a lot more of men being able to do what they're called and gifted to do and women having to do admin and then every now and then getting to do what they're called to do.
Yeah.
Let me put it like that way. And so I feel gifted and called to help women, not women's ministry like we know it, but genuinely help women get through the grit and grief of life. And that's what I'm doing now. I feel like I'm doing ministry right now. It's not in the four walls of a church. Now, I also, again, still feel called to preach. I'm still kind of working through my own theology, like my own process on that. B's like a little further ahead than me in that. A little, that's probably kind. But like, I think because I still can find myself, it's a tough thing to break that, like wanting to be a part of it, but also hating it. It's like that addiction. It's an addiction. So it's that, I want to be a part of it, but I also hate it, but I still want to belong because when you're not a part of that, I got taught for so many years, if you're not a part of that and you're not in the in crowd, whatever it takes, then where do you really belong? Are you even a Christian? And it's a very interesting season to be in because I really am dealing with and have forgiven genuinely a lot of people. It took me a minute and I thought I had, but then like turns out, like when you think you've forgiven a lot of it and then like stuff comes up again, you're like, I hate them so much. You're like, I still got some stuff. But I'm at the place now where I genuinely have love for a lot of the places I've been that valued what I could do practically so that they could do the things that I felt called to do, honestly. And so if I went back now, I wouldn't go back in the way I did because what I did was perform so that maybe I could do what I felt called to do. Whereas now I feel like God's like, hey, what if I open some doors and you don't have to apologize for them? And people can feel a certain type of way about that. But I feel like God gives us gifts for a reason. And
I don't understand why I ever go back. Because I think the problem is not, I think the problem is an understanding of the season that you're in.
What do you mean?
Like, you're preaching every day.
Yeah.
Like, as I saw you do is preach. Anytime you get on and you're telling someone about...
Oh, I do. Today I did makeup.
No, but you're still preaching. It's just more in a freaking human experience, okay? So you're preaching to women and people about gut health. You're preaching to them about acne. You're preaching to them about staying healthy. You're preaching. You are constantly preaching all in this beautiful bow, this wrapped up bow of humanity. Like, I am very human and I'm expressing to you that I struggled with my doing God when I was broken out because I was so insecure. I'm freaking like struggling with just actually just being confident. Like I can't even whatever. So what you see is like, oh, this may not be a spiritual message. It's like,
no, but I think that there is something like, I still love reading the Bible. Like that didn't change. And I think I had to come off of church staff to realize I genuinely enjoy studying the Bible. Like, I genuinely enjoy finding these things and spending time with God, studying that and then telling people about it. Like, it pumps me up. And so,
but that's what I'm saying. Like, what's like, you're doing it.
No, yeah. And I'm not saying I'm not doing it now. I'm just saying, like,
no, because earlier you said, I still feel called to preach.
Right. No. And
so when you said that mentally, that literally makes a division. That means that you're not preaching.
Because that's still part of my process, is I'm still realizing that what I'm doing is preaching because of, I'm 32 years old, takes like a minute. You know, I've been like off of church staff for one year. So that takes a while to kind of go back and forth from, but I still think that there is like, I like preaching. I don't know. Like, Brandon, I don't know.
You mean something. You like preaching it from in a pulpit. The way that you used to do?
Yeah.
It.
From a pulpit. Because
for me, that's something like I won't ever be able to shake it. Because again, here, obviously it's a lot more casual in, you know, and the stories are presented or whatever. But there's something so exciting for me of being in a church space like that, opening up the word and really actually being able to take all these people somewhere in a live setting.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, once we start doing live stuff with here, like we got our first live event coming up here in two months. Like, that's going to be amazing. Like, there's something about communicating the things of God in a live setting that you just can't get via. And so I think for me, again, that might not necessarily be behind a pulpit of a church for the rest of my life. Like, that could very well mean it's literally just this podcast and us doing live events, and I get my preaching fix, you know. But
totally.
I do love it. And every time that I do get the chance to speak, I'm like, sweet. I get to study, I prep, you know, and
but
all
that's
that sorts
what I
of stuff.
Saying,
like, I get the live speaking aspect of it for sure. Because that was my favorite part of performing in between my songs. I would get to preach. Exactly. But the reason why I cannot and will not go back there, because I know back there's limitations. I cannot, no matter what, like, be you love your church, but there's 1,000% a limitation. There are things that you may think that you know for damn sure. I can't say this.
Yeah, but if you're performing somewhere, you're going to tailor the performance depending on the audience that you're performing for.
But there's no limitations. That's me tailoring that. If I want, if I choose not to say something, is different than I cannot say something. That's very different.
B can say whatever he wants.
Negative. If you are in somebody else's pulpit, you cannot say whatever you want. You have to fall in line with the majority belief system structure or whatever church that you're in. When we were performing Catholic churches, there's certain things that we could not say. When we were in Protestant churches, when we were in certain places, we couldn't say certain things because of their religion, of what they believed.
I get that.
So when it comes to wanting to be in a pulpit, what you are doing is you're climbing into whoever's box, because no matter what, they're not living your experience and the freedoms that you're enjoying. Or what if the freedoms that you're enjoying or you're like reveling in and you're finding the most God in, the depth in, is the stuff that you really want to talk about. But you know, these people, well, you'll get kicked off stage.
Well, I'm not going to preach somewhere where I know I literally can't be myself, but just because I don't agree with the point of view of someone doesn't mean I can't then share what we have in common.
I'm not saying that either. All I am acknowledging is that there are limitations.
Yeah.
That if you want to share what you want to share, Bobies, you know, preaching is supposed to be say what the Lord is telling you to say. Right. Even though it's become, all right, I got five.
Sure.
Got five sermons that are my go-to. Which one am I going to pull out? Because I really want to rock, you know, I got my best hits. It's rarely where it's like, God, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I'm just going to stay an hour before service and you're going to tell me what to say. I don't need no notes. I've rarely seen preachers do that. It's always like, I didn't say it doesn't happen. I
said rarely.
Rarely see. Yeah, and I've been with a lot of preachers. Most of them have stuff prepared and it's fine. It's fine. I'm not saying that that's bad. Not everybody can just flow. But all I am saying is there is a limitation the second you step behind the pulpit. There just is, because we all know that there are certain do's and don'ts. There just are. And I guess that is why I can never find my, and I don't want to say never, Jesus, I'm sorry. That is why I will have to be forced by the Holy Spirit drug onto a pulpit before I say anything at a church, because I know I'm going to speak exactly how I speak. I'm not going to change it.
I'm I can attest to that to a fact. The last church that I was employed by, I was kind of the troublemaker. And so I happened to feel very passionate about the things that I feel passionate about. And they didn't really feel the same way. And so it caused a lot of tension and a lot of just bumping heads. And ultimately, my last Sunday, it was a big church that's big on notes. So you submit your sermon Wednesday before the Sunday. So they can print out, which I absolutely hate. I hate, so they can print out so people can take notes. So it's fill in the blanks. So I literally, people have just my preaching points of the main thing I'm trying to say. And so then I would have to like literally walk them through filling in the blanks. I think it's very childish, but there's some people apparently who really enjoy that. To me, it takes out of the moment of actually being engaged in this conversation that's happening in real time, but in front of you, into I got to fill out my blank. So anyways, Saturday night, I'm praying and the Holy Spirit says, hey, I got a word of the Lord for you. Write this down, yada, yada, yada. So I go on a Sunday and I'm like, hey, I know this is probably the first time at this church, but I'm going to ask you to put your notes away. And people are like, oh my God. Am I still in the blank? And my supervisor is sitting, I call him supervisor because that was very much so our interaction. He's sitting in the front row and he's just like, oh God, Brandon's about to drop a bomb in here in the worst way possible. You know? So I speak the word of the Lord and it's a little bit of a prophetic type thing, but it's also a little bit of a warning. And I walk in on Monday and resign.
No!
Because it was like, it felt like, oh, this is go time. And so,
wow.
But anyways, I think one of the things that I love to do is I love to, and in certain ways, like in this platform here at Knights, I can be as crazy as I want to be in helping to push the conversation forward.
Right.
And in some church-ish settings, again, I can't push the ball as much forward as I can here, but I understand that I still get to push the ball forward. Like I get to encourage people like, hey, you're here. But there is a little something over there. So I might not be able to be turned up Brandon at a 10, but I'm the type of guy I'm always going to try and push it forward.
Right.
Like I'm going to always be the guy that stirs the pot. Now, whether you get the fast blender or the slow blender, I'm still stirring the pot. So when I go to, when I'm speaking behind podiums at churches, I realize, what kind of church, what kind of setting is this? And how much am I going to stir the pot today? So,
okay. You know, I realized what it is. I feel like I've entered my John the Baptist mode. My ass has already been in the wilderness. I've been eating locusts, wearing whatever the hell I want. And you cannot tame this guy to go back and be tame again.
Sure.
Because I'm like, no, it's like, I need to be the raw in the most rawest form of who I am in order to be, in order to meet someone in their rawest form.
Yeah.
Like polish don't work for certain people that are gritty, grimy and in the gutter and they just don't give a shit about anything. Like they're at the end.
Right.
Polish don't work for those people. But those are the people that I really, really like, feel like, yo, God is with you. Like he's for you. Like they're just done with all the other stuff. Like I don't want to say I get annoyed. I'm eerily bothered even by the structure of how a service flows. Because I think at this point, I now believe service is always happening. Like the communal sense of what the church is, I feel like it was always meant to be a life lived together. So I feel like we're constantly in service. We're constantly in worship because we have been told or made to believe that worship is a thing that we do at a time with a certain brand of music. When the word teaches us that our actions can be worship, whatever we're doing at that moment, if it's done unto God, it's an act of worship. So it's like, I can't even get down with the system or the way it is, because I'm right. Like, that's not worship. That's, yeah. That's a side of worship, a very small side of it.
Yeah.
But everything I'm doing is worship, and I can't let you make me believe that it's not. Mm. So when it comes to this podcast, it's like, you can't make me believe that what we're doing is not real, because that inbox is steady popping with so many people that are like, I don't rock with that anymore.
Right.
Because at some point, they're going to get uncomfortable with how shitty my life is. And I don't know how to speak their language. And they for damn sure don't want to speak mine. They're afraid to speak mine. They're afraid that they're going to be sinners if they speak mine. If they get raw, if they get real with me, they're afraid, you know? So
I think I get that. Like, I appreciate that for sure. Like, the you've entered that John the Baptist eating locusts, honey, got those skirts happening mode. I get that. That's
which is not a better place. Mode. I don't want
that
it to be.
That doesn't feel like my mode. Yeah. I feel like the people that I'm called to reach, that God will, like, has given me the whatever to reach, are usually women, honestly, but also guys. Guys for sometimes in my DMs a different reason, but that's for a different topic one
amen.
Day. But
amen.
The women that feel like they've grown up in church and have kept that thing, and that thing is different for all of them, mm-hmm. a secret, because they haven't been able to tell the truth because they feel like they're going to be shamed. And in my story and who I am and me being an authentic version of hopefully like a Jesus follower, but there's also like the good, the bad, and the ugly share a lot of it, has been able to reach those people that perhaps the John the Baptist, they're never going to see them because they're too afraid to even look that far.
Sure. Or,
but the ones that are very polished, they're like, well, these people have never understood. So I think I like what Brandon said. As long as you're pushing the ball forward, or however he said it, sports terms, like I feel like because I grew up in church feeling like I couldn't tell anyone and it ate me up inside, I don't feel the calling to go out into the freaking desert. But I feel like I'm still meant to be called to the four walls of the church, not like I used to be. And because I've had to even figure out my own value in this last season. But like knowing that the people that I'm reaching by being who I am, but I'm going to find them in different places. So there might be different aspects of my personality, because you don't know who I am by just meeting me for the first time. People that think that they know mm-hmm. me because they met me once, you get very different layers of people. That's humanity. But revealing different sides of me depending on who I'm around. Now, that used to be different in that I would just change depending on who I was around. But there's a new understanding of I can be relating to people in different ways to be able to, again, do things that you couldn't do. And you're reaching people that I couldn't reach. I don't know.
And again, there's no right or wrong. That's why it's to each person. It's like whether or not you could. Some people are OK with I. The reason I say I know I can't is because I don't think I can put everything back in the bag, which doesn't make me like better or more free or more woke or whatever the hell that is. It's not that. It's just that.
I'm at the point the bag.
I like can't that. Put anything back into the bag. Like I'm at the point where I'm just like, oh, I'm as unfiltered as I can be. And I love it. And I think I'm always going to, you know, as I grow, as I whatever, I'll work myself back in certain areas, but it'll never be because of where I'm standing. It'll always be because I'm just walking this thing out with God. And it's like, I've really settled into the relationship aspect of it all. And it is. I mean, I get on the outside how it can look scary, but I think it's great to have a perspective from people who have actually, like, we're literally born into it, lived in it, was paid by it. And now we're on the outside looking back in like, man, you know, you guys are a wealth of knowledge for a lot of people, which I think you're right. You know, there's a lot of people I could never even come close to identifying with that. So
you
I
can relate to in different ways, you know, like,
yeah, I have the industry I understand industry, but I can never like recreate the father that.
Well, because you know, it's childhood. It's your
fantasy. Yeah, that's
we're growing up. People would joke, I was born on the front row of the church. I'm pretty sure that's not true, but it could have been. Like, yeah. I was in church every Sunday. I remember doing one sporting event on a Sunday, netball tournament. I sucked.
Netball.
But you better believe that I had to go to church that night, and I walked in crying because I was so tired. And the youth pastor came up, and they go, what are you crying about? And I was like, I'm just so tired. And they were like, well, you're in the house of the Lord. And I was like, okay, fine. Like, I just, it was like this, like, you've already spent the morning not in church. Like, the least you could do would be respect the Lord. Like, man.
That's so funny.
It is what it is.
Man, I'm so grateful. Hopefully you guys got some awesome laughs and some thoughts and all that good stuff. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to share something real quick because
Brandon's always like
Manny, obviously, Manny closes out, man. Manny's a leader here. But one of the things, man, I think Manny and I think all of us in a way, right? As followers of Jesus, like there is a prophetic call on our life. Now, some are obviously born to be a prophet, operate in that office. Some of us prophesy over people without us even knowing it. But the role of prophecy in a lot of ways, like when we look at it biblically, like obviously John the Baptist, Jesus would characterize as the greatest prophet that's born of woman. And his ministry was he was in the wilderness and these people were going to him to see him and hear his message. And when we look at other biblical prophets, some of them were placed within the king's quarters. And some of them were playing both worlds, where they were on the outside, hanging in slums. And at moments in time, God would bring them into these high places to critique the empire, to essentially say, hey, let us imagine to do this a completely different way. Let me introduce you to the kingdom of God. But I think regardless, like, I love this. I'm reading this book called Prophetic Imagination by Walter Brueggemann, and it's, like, changing my life. And one of the things he says is that the task of prophetic imagination is to cut through the numbness, to penetrate the self-deception so that God of the endings is confessed as Lord. And I love that because that's what you do, Manny. I feel like, man, like you cut through the numbness. And I think that's like this phrase has really been like, man, that's so good. Because in so many ways, the system that's in place for a lot of these PKs, they're not in a position where they can actually feel all that's going on with them. Instead of them being able to have their own experience, they are giving a behavior pattern of this is how you're supposed to be. That your life actually really isn't yours. This is how I need you to be. This is how I need you to act. And the role of the prophetic thing is to cut through the bullshit and call us back into reality. In a sense, that's why I love preaching so much, is because for whatever, however long that moment is in time, I get to do my best to pull you out of the matrix and to pull you into what is really happening and the story that God is unfolding in our lives right now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
That's dope. I like that.
I like that a lot. The pulling out of the numbness. Because that's what, like, and once you come out of the numbness, it's so painful for a while.
Yeah.
It's like you've been on painkillers for so long. And you didn't even realize you're in pain. And because there is so much there that you've numbed with religion, with duty, with what you grew up in, that you then have to allow. First of all, you have to acknowledge pain. And that takes a while. But I think that like these conversations help do that. And that's like, dude, I freaking love that, man.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. Bobis, you want to take us out?
Hell no.
Stuck.
You don't remember the prayer? You don't remember the benediction?
Oh, we hope. Oh, I don't want to mess it up.
No, you can mess it up.
You find a seat at the table. We hope that you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you're always welcome at ours. Did I mess it up?
You are always welcome at ours. Well ours. Done, you lady. Yeah. We'll talk soon. We love you guys. Cheers.